Welcome to the Mobility Podcast, recording live from the Automated Vehicle Symposium in Orlando, Florida.
Sunny, scorching hot Orlando, Florida.
Sunny, beautiful. We're going to be here all week and have an all-star lineup of guests, so make sure to subscribe and check back daily for all the great episodes to come. With us today, we really do have a rock star in transportation in the state of Florida. State Senator Jeff Brandis and Chris Emanuel from the Florida Chamber of Commerce. Jeff Brandis is a lifelong resident of St. Petersburg, a veteran, and a local businessman. After serving in the Army from 1999 to 2006, he joined his grandfather in the family lumber business. He was first elected to the Florida House of Representatives in 2010, and then to the Florida Senate in 2012, and subsequently has been reelected. He's chaired the Senate Committee on Transportation, the Appropriations Subcommittee on Transportation, Tourism, and Economic Development, and he currently serves as the chair of the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Criminal and Civil Justice. He's nationally recognized as a policy leader in the areas of autonomous vehicles and mobility and criminal justice reform, among other issues. Also with us today, we have Chris Emanuel, who's the Director of Infrastructure and Governance Policy at the Florida Chamber of Commerce, where he serves as the primary advocate for transportation, utilities, energy, and property rights issues on behalf of the state's largest business association. Senator Brandis, Chris, thank you guys for joining us today and for hosting us in the great state of Florida. Now, Senator Brandis, you've led the charge in the Florida legislature on a long list of policy debates surrounding new mobility and autonomous vehicles and all that. Can you talk about your approach to regulating these new technologies and some of the kind of your hit list of accomplishments there?
Yeah, so I'm really captivated by this idea that there's one big idea in every area of public policy, and we need to just focus on that. And so my team really works on a variety of issues, very eclectic issues sometimes, but it's generally because we think it's the big idea in that area of policy, and we try to focus in on that. So we think about transportation space. We recognize that the world is getting more shared. We think it's getting more electric, and think it's getting more self-driving or automated in many ways. And so how are we positioning the state's policies in each one of those different areas so that we're leading amongst the states? And I think if you talk to the ride-sharing firms right now in the Uber and Lyft, they will tell you that Florida has the best laws in the country as it relates to the shared economy.
Which is fascinating after years.
Right, yeah, it took 4 years to get there, but we I now believe, and they believe, and the way they tell me is that we have the best laws in the country as it relates to that. And if you think about on the automation side, Florida's now gone through its third iteration of a self-driving car law, and we kind of moved through testing, and then we moved through a gray area of autonomy, and now we're kind of explicit that you don't need a driver in the vehicle to operate the vehicle in Florida roads. And so I think now that we're in the 3.0 version, I would say we have the best laws in the country as it relates to the shared economy, and now we have the best laws in the country as it relates to self-driving and autonomy. Next, we focus on electrification, and that's kind of so we'll have kind of all three of those major areas covered as we move forward. But that's really as it relates to transportation, the foundational level of legislation that we have addressed over the last few years.
And you started, or you wrote your first bill, Senator Brandis, a few years back, right? I mean, this was right when people were first starting to talk about AVs.
Yeah, so I was captivated again by this idea of finding the big idea. Mm-hmm. And so I went to what I thought was the single best source of new ideas for legislators, TED Talks. And I watched hundreds and hundreds of TED Talks trying to figure out what was the big idea in these different areas. And what I recognized in my history of being a military officer, I had served in Iraq and was a transportation officer and had been leading convoys all over the country. And came across Sebastian Thrun's discussion on self-driving cars and was captivated. I remember driving up to Tallahassee, it's a four-hour drive for me, and playing it over and over and over again for the entire 4 hours. Wow. While I was in the car, just trying to understand and digest all the things that were implications playing out. Because I quickly realized the thing that would have made it better for me and my soldiers while I was in Iraq is if we had not had to be in those convoys.
Right. The whole MRAM debate.
Right. If we had somehow been able to go from point A to point B without having to drive for in a good day 6 mm-hmm. hours, on a bad day 14 hours through the desert. Mm-hmm. And so that, and then as we we explored it more, just the other ripple effects of how this begins to transform cities. Mm-hmm. That to me just was fascinating, as well as obviously the safety aspects of it and the ability for technology, for that new rising technology to take care of some of the problems we're seeing with technology right now, which is distracted driving and other things.
People listening to TED Talks. I was picturing you just sitting there watching it on your, watching the YouTube version on your phone.
Which, Jeff's being modest, he was coming up with this idea in 2011 before ride sharing was really a thing. It really wasn't a thing when we were discussing and passing our first autonomous vehicle structure. Mm-hmm. But Jeff was already thinking about how to text and drive and watch videos and drive when an autonomous vehicle was in operation. So we've been doing this, what, 8 years, nine years?
And going on nine years now.
It's impressive to see how the technology has changed and the uses have changed and the regulations have had to keep up every single iteration.
Right.
And now, fast forwarding to today, so last month, Governor DeSantis signed HB 311 into law, which would allow autonomous vehicles with no safety drivers to be on public roads. Could you tell us about this bill and how it sort of evolved and how we got here today?
Yeah, so we worked through for the last 2 years kind of on the next iteration of the kind of 3.0 version of Florida's autonomous vehicle law. And I'm somebody who believes that ultimately insurance is going to have to play a major role. So if we look at Uber and Lyft as kind of the canary in the coal mine for where autonomy goes, I think we used them and their insurance amounts as kind of the proxy for what we think an autonomous vehicle should have, which is $1 million. So they have $1 million policies. We thought that that was a reasonable place to set the autonomous vehicle standard. And it was something that the industry generally was comfortable with as an amount that was obtainable and not overly cost prohibitive.
And this is for like a longer term thing, not the initial, okay, someone just have 5 or 10 million just in case. Like you saw in the early, what was it, Nevada?
Yeah.
They had much higher.
Right. In the early versions of just testing, it was a lot higher. Mm-hmm. But we're really focused on deployments.
Yeah.
We've kind of moved beyond the testing phase and are really saying, what is it going to take to deploy in a state like Florida? Mm-hmm. And we think using a common insurance amount that people can be comfortable with, and when we say it's the same amount that your Uber driver has, politically and publicly, that's something people can get comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. One thing that's probably important to note, and it seems really obvious probably around the table, is that this was a piece of legislation that went through a legislative body and was signed by a governor. So when businesses are looking to deploy in Florida, they've got a lot more regulatory certainty than an executive order that you may be worried about being rescinded when times change or events happen.
Hypothetically speaking.
We've not only provided a good regulatory structure, but we've done it in a way that I think provides a lot of businesses with a lot of comfort when they're choosing a deployment site.
And an obvious willingness for let us know when and what 4.0 might necessarily need to look at.
We'll see when we get there what that may look like. But I think it's important to note that it's passed unanimously.
Yeah, which is fascinating.
It's fascinating, yeah. But it's because we took the time to get people comfortable with the technology, right? Through the first iteration of it, we brought Google's vehicles in. This is back in 2011 and 12. In fact, my first trip in a self-driving car was with Anthony Lewandowski.
No way.
And we pulled over to the side of the road on I-10, and he says, I probably shouldn't do this, but why don't you get in the driver's seat and drive on
And
I-10.
He was right.
Sounds pretty on brand.
I feel like that's a famous line from Anthony.
This feels like the right moment to take a little extra risk.
I think the statute of limitations for him is up. I drove a Google self-driving car, let it drive me, or engaged it in 2011. On I-10, going 70 miles an hour in traffic. Wow. And, this was the clandestinely put together Toyota Prius.
Yeah.
Right?
With the popcorn bucket.
With the popcorn bucket on top, and so every year we have worked to expose legislators to that type of to the vehicles themselves, get them riding in them, but get them comfortable with the conversation. And I think it's helped that we've had players like Uber and Lyft help along with that conversation, obviously all the major auto manufacturers, but we've really built as a coalition of support. And so when you came into the legislature this year, it was a united front. It was a conversation going on in all the OEMs, all the technology companies and the ride-sharing firms were saying, this is the right thing for Florida. This is what the future is. And Florida, if you want to take that next step, this legislation is the step to take.
So now that that step has been taken, what do you see happening next in Florida with AVs? And I guess also there have been some exciting sort of deployments in previous years. Could you give some background on this?
Yeah, so let's talk about the firms that are here today. Mm-hmm. We've got Voyage that's deployed in the villages. Mm-hmm. You've got Starsky Robotics, which is operating on the roads of Florida as a tractor trailer company. They're operating a business in Florida today, and they just completed the first run of a 10-mile trip with no human occupant in the vehicle. So that just happened within the last few weeks. You've got Ford and Argo AI down in Miami. Mm-hmm.
With the pizzas.
But you've got the pizzas going on and Postmates and Walmart.
Yeah. I say that jokingly because it does sound silly, but that's actually a really important.
It's really important that we understand the business model and the human and machine interface
from an external.
Correct. Yeah. When people leave their condos, come down and get a pizza out of a self-driving car. That's a question that we need to answer and think through.
But mozzarella mobility is really what it is.
right. So I think it's exciting that we're seeing these deployments happening in Florida. And they're happening here for a number of reasons. One, a big reason is it doesn't snow. Mm-hmm. We're not digging up our lane lines every year.
Right.
And so we have a lane line infrastructure and overall infrastructure that's fairly stable. Two, we have a great regulatory environment. Right? They know the rules. It's not, as Chris said, it's not an executive order that may change at the whim of the governor. It is the law of the land in Florida. And so that, I think, is great. I think Florida is a state with 21 million people. It's a very mature Department of Transportation, Department of Highway Safety. I think the leadership that they provide, their willingness to take R&D measures, I think is very, very positive as well. And so what we've seen is they're willing to kind of step out on some of this and lead because they recognize that there's got to be technology solutions to some of these technology problems.
And so, Chris, the Florida Chamber has really been focused on attracting these companies and making Florida appealing for AVs. So could you tell us about what you've been doing to help to make Florida, not only it already is competitive, but show how competitive you are in this field?
Well, the Florida Chamber's been around this for, I guess, about 9 years. Mm-hmm. And about a year and a half ago, we put together a formal group. We call it Autonomous Florida. It's got the stated goal of making Florida the autonomous capital of North America. And that's not as crazy as it sounds when you talk about the regulatory structure, the things like topography that I think we'll get to in a moment, the business opportunities, the tourist opportunities, the special district opportunities. But the Florida Chamber is a business association, and the businesses of Florida see this as an opportunity to bring high-paying jobs into the state, to increase mobility, which is exceptionally important for a state that's growing by 900 new residents net every single day. Wow. So that's 4.5 million more people by 2030, on top of the 21.5 million that we already have. At any given time, we've got about 2 to 4.5 million tourists in the state for a grand total of 126 million out-of-state tourists.
Half of which are right outside the door here.
Yeah. Orlando welcomed over 50 million people through its airport that arrived or departed. This is an awesome place to show these technologies off. And I think the Florida Chamber and the businesses of Florida recognize this as an opportunity that they wanted to be helpful in, that they wanted to work with these companies and really start designing things that are going to be around for the next half century with what the technology is going to look like in the next 5 years.
So my next question was, can each of you give your elevator pitch for Florida? So I think I can scratch that one off. I do want to talk, when we talk about it from a job creation standpoint, how do we get it from being San Francisco companies coming here to test to being people setting up shop here? Is there a broader, because, you know, a lot of it comes down to tech talent. It comes to VC access and all of those things that, you know, the Valley really has. But how do we get that so that that companies are setting roots here in Florida and elsewhere?
Well, I think that the Valley has a lot of strengths, but some of the strengths that Florida has that I think makes it attractive is that you've got these captive markets that are doing repetitive trips and really specialized types of events that may be automated. We've got the opportunity to do trucking at night across really well-striped, snow-free, well-funded roads. We have people making repeated trips to retirement communities and theme parks and universities. And we have metropolitan organizations that are leaning into these opportunities, trying to figure out where they can reduce congestion. Mm-hmm. We also have leaders like Jeff Brandis and Governor DeSantis that are trying to figure out how to increase safety, embrace technology, and reduce congestion. And connected and autonomous vehicles are an answer to a lot of those. We've got a lot of unique things that make Florida, I think, a great opportunity, and I think you're going to see more deployments over the next couple of years.
And I'll just add to that, you know, Florida right now has the number one university system in the country. So that's by U.S. News and World Report. We've had that for the last 3 years, and I think if the legislatures make this consistent investment in the university system, so we see between that and what we're working, I mean, and the regulatory environment, and the R&D that our Department of Transportation is doing, I think all of those things play into the fact that Florida's in for the long haul, and we are making the strategic investments of a long-term nature necessary to sustain this. So if you go just a few miles away from here, you'll visit the new research and development facility at SunTrax, which is a 2.25-mile oval with a 200-acre infield built to highway specs, that you can drive around the entire oval at 55 miles an hour. I did it in a Starsky semi truck a month ago. And the ability to test in that environment and then drive 5 miles and get on I-4 and test in one of the most challenging roads in the country, frankly, on the I-4 interstate, to me is just a fascinating opportunity that frankly is unique in the country.
And when SunTrax, that is phase one recently completed, which is the test track. What's the whole, how many phases are there, and what's the timelines?
There's really two phases. There's the oval phase, which is completed, the 2.5-mile oval. And then there's really phase two, which is the 200-acre infield that's going to be specially designed with intersections.
Like a movie set.
With containers that can move, so we can change the dynamics of the city. We can change the structure of and really focused on maximizing our options for how we can modify that facility to meet the individual testing needs that people have. And then, you know, because it's Florida, it rains here every day between 4 and 4:30 between June and September. So you can test in the rain almost predictably every single day.
That's great. And where did the funding come around for SunTrax?
So SunTrax is actually owned by the Turnpike Authority. So as people pay tolls, those tolls go into the Turnpike Authority. Those can either go to pay off bonds or to do some R&D. And so they made the strategic investment in SunTrax. It was originally designed to test tolling equipment. And we kind of co-opted it into the self-driving space as well.
That's a good use if I ever see one.
That is fascinating.
So I'd like to turn to the federal government, federal AV policies for a little bit. So the AV bills that were before Congress last year failed to pass, self-drive, AV start. What action would you like to see from Congress on AVs or even from DOT?
So I think they either need to do something significant or nothing at all, right?
Either there's a saying for that.
Yes, there is. I'll let you say that one. But no, I think they need to, like, either let's go in a few more years where the states are continuing to lead, and let's just solve this at the state level, mm-hmm. and let them handle some things that only they can handle. For example, do passenger vehicles need windshield wipers and rear view mirrors if we're in autonomous mode?
Mm-hmm. Or if it's a delivery vehicle.
Or if it's a delivery vehicle.
That is designed to not have.
Right, correct. Yeah. If it's a delivery vehicle, does it need those types of features? Mm-hmm. So I think there are some things that they can provide some exemptions for, mm-hmm. in a cleaner way, but that only they can do.
Right.
And then I think on the safety side, they have a significant role to play as well, to try to kind of have a standard for safety, mm-hmm. As much as they can. But I'm somebody who believes that if they're not going to make a significant investment in this, and if they're not going to lead, and if they can't get anything through Congress, then the best thing to do is let the states continue to lead. because I think you're starting to see an I-10 coalition begin to build, right? I think you're going to see Texas, Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama kind of all join in and have a commons, at least freight law as it relates to trucking for AVs. I think that's very, very positive and will go a long way. But what you generally see is, you know, look, the states are the laboratories of democracy.
Right.
Let's let the states continue to rise up. Let's let them continue to explore what the laws should look like. And then ultimately the federal government will come online. You know, Churchill said about America, he says, we tend to do the right thing after we've exhausted all other options. I think that's how Congress tends to work. And so let's let the states continue to innovate. And then when the timing is right, they'll naturally go that direction.
Right, because it's always been a natural sort of partnership between federal, state, local governments on traffic safety, et cetera. But I imagine that as a state, you don't want to be setting and don't even have the authority to set your own motor vehicle safety standards. It doesn't seem like something you would want to do.
Right, right. That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, so I guess, so this has been fascinating, and we're really excited to, you know, just looking at where we were a year ago until now, what do you imagine everyone's going to be talking about at the AVS next year?
So I'm really fascinated by what happens to cities. And I think that's one of the most under-discussed areas of policy. I do an autonomous vehicle summit every year called the Florida Autonomous Vehicle Summit. And last year we had a representative from Gensler, which is the largest architectural firm in the country, come in and talk about their vision for how autonomy is going to be affecting buildings and cities and parking structures and things like that. I think that's actually one of the most fascinating discussions that you just don't hear at these types of conferences.
Right.
But if you think about, you know, how cities change when we went from the horse and buggy to the Model T, and you're saying, all right, well, this is our generation's version of that experience, how does that change our cities? Right? If you travel around Florida, the two big issues we face in almost every community is transportation and affordable housing.
Right.
How does autonomy change the paradigm for transportation and affordable housing in downtowns and communities? How do we think about, you know, do we need these parking structures anymore? Are we allowed to put in more density over time? Should we be thinking about, if we're building new parking structures, should we be thinking about flat floors, higher ceilings, so that we could ultimately convert those and potentially build these buildings down over time? If we're building a new Class A, Class B office, that building's going to have a 75-year lifespan.
Right.
Right. Well, if we believe, look, at the far end of autonomy, right, it's 15, 20 years out. Okay, but that still means the majority of their lifespan is going to be with self-driving vehicles that may not need to park in those facilities.
Right.
So let's begin to think about that today. Let's design or begin to talk about designing our cities around that today. One of the things I'm most proud of in the Florida legislation is that we forced the Department of Transportation in law to consider autonomy and new technologies that are coming out in every iteration of our long-term plan. And we've been doing it for the last 9 years.
Wow.
To me, that's one of the most exciting things because it makes them stay at the cutting edge in all of their long-term planning. I think we've got to get cities there too.
Now, you said that the next big focus area, we've done TNCs in the shared, we've done the AV bills on the automation part, the electrification side of things. Where do you, from a policy standpoint, what are going to be the key components there?
So I think if you think about electric vehicles in Florida today, they're less than 0.5% of total vehicles in the state. But we can see this number growing over time, and it'll probably grow pretty exponentially as we see the significant investments that essentially every auto manufacturer is making in the space. And so we see a declining gas tax over time. So I think the first step is we've got to kind of head that off at the pass, especially while it's such a low amount of vehicles today. So I think that's something that's got to become a conversation. We're seeing this as a conversation in most states. So is that an increase in the registration fees for EVs to try to counteract that gas tax delta? But ultimately, the gas tax is how we pay for infrastructure in the state. And as Chris said, you know, we have 21 million residents growing to 25 million residents. We had 126 million tourists last year. Our infrastructure is under pressure all the time.
I'd like to hop in here for just a second. That's an important point when you're talking about electric vehicles, but we're already facing that problem with higher fuel mile per gallons. The fact that cars are more efficient and more environmentally friendly is great.
It's
and
a
there's
good problem.
So many great problems that come from that. But the fact is, my mom's Yukon XL is now getting better gas mileage than my first car, which weighed about a third of it did. So we're not reaping the same type of gas taxes that we base the whole system on. Mm-hmm. So there's pressure outside of electric vehicle, and that's an important conversation that you can't wait until a market penetration of 5 or 10% EV to have. That needs to happen today.
Chris also drove a Lamborghini as his first car. That might not be the most valid, you know, base point. But what are your thoughts on a VMT? Has the state explored that from a pilot?
I think that's too far off.
Do you?
Right, I think that states probably should just focus on registration, at least for the short term. Okay. Maybe, you know, I think that as far as a VMT goes, like, we need to get through this taste from 2020 to 2030, and then let's talk in 2030. Let's sunset the law in 2030 and let that legislature take on those challenges. I just don't think you can see that far ahead. And frankly, the infrastructure that you would have to put in place for VMT is onerous. I mean, you have to think about the cost of the gas tax to collect for the state is virtually nothing.
Right.
Because we're collecting from distributors who are distributing to the gas stations, and they're collecting from the gas stations. We've got to find a similar cost structure that so that the cost of collection isn't more than the tax we're bringing in. Mm-hmm. And so if we were going to move to a VMT, it would be a significant burden. It would take a long time to implement that at scale.
I think that's a good question, because I mean, Oregon in their pilot, they have 3 or 4 different vendors they use, and they give people the option, you know, with GPS, without GPS, however you want to do it. But the question always comes up as to whether an EV fee would be regressive, because currently the gas tax is, it's by use, and you're paying by how much you're using the roads. So I think it's an interesting question on how to balance the need for sort of plugging the hole in the sinking ship of our trust funds, but also making sure that we're using this the right way.
So the way I'm thinking about it is, let's figure out what the average is,
mm-hmm.
and let's just peg it at the average.
Right.
So if the average person pays $190 in gas tax any given year, let's set that as, or roughly that as, what the registration fee should be for an EV, for a fully electric EV.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense.
And so is there anything on the adoption side of
So I think Florida's unique in the adoption side, right? I think it's obviously more charging stations, but I think you're going to get those anyways, right? I think those are coming online. We see this with the VW settlement money and where that's being spent. We also see this as you know, the major, you know, the major oil companies and gas stations are putting in electric vehicle charging stations at their facilities, fast chargers, because they want them to capture that market for the convenience store as well, and they're not going to give up that business.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Florida's unique because we have to think about evacuations.
Yeah.
And while it's 0.5% of vehicles isn't a lot today, and there's probably the charging structure sufficient to evacuate, let's imagine we have 10% of vehicles in Florida that are electric. What would that look like if we try to evacuate them? It's not just bringing another tanker truck online. You have to have the space available. And one of the things that I think is really challenging is at the federal law that prohibits us from putting charging stations at rest stops. Right? So why can't we, at least in the terms of evacuation, we should be able to make the case that we should be able to have electric charging at rest stops. And I think if the feds did one thing, that would be incredibly helpful for range charging. But I think we've got to be thinking about that with the state overall of how do we strategically place electric vehicle charging stations for the unique challenge that Florida faces, which is sometimes it evacuates a million people.
And one interesting thing when you're talking about hurricane evacuation is that not only does everybody leave, they also come back at some point. And we saw this in Irma, which was a giant hurricane that pretty much caused the entire peninsula to consider evacuation, some places mandated. People left over time based on their own risk tolerance. You had some people leave in 7 days beforehand, some leave in 3. But the second that hurricane
everyone's
was
ready
over,
to
everybody was going to – all hopped on the roads at the same time.
Right.
We had more congestion coming back into the state than we did evacuating the state. And that's interesting when you're talking about charging infrastructure, autonomous vehicles, shared mobility options, when you're asking people to rely on public transit. I mean, there's a problem getting out, and there's perhaps a bigger problem coming back in.
Yeah, and we're specifically talking about EVs, but when we're talking about autonomous vehicles evacuating, that's a whole different wrinkle that we have really not really even contemplated yet and thought through how that might play out and the charging infrastructure and everything else needed for that. So I think, you know, I'm excited about where Florida is. I don't think we have all the answers. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the farthest you can really plan out right now is maybe 5-10 years because things are changing so quickly and states are having to adopt so much. I mean, tell me another law that's changed 3 times in the last 10 years in a major area of public policy.
Right.
Right. They just don't iterate that quickly. But we're seeing, you know, Florida's transportation system iterating at the series of a fruit fly. You know, it's been pretty fascinating to watch this play out. And we've had to address rideshare. We've had to address micromobility. We've had to address autonomy. All of those things, essentially the last 3 or 4 years, as they've come online. And so I think it's exciting. We're going to have to eventually address VTOL and vertical takeoff and landing technologies. These are things that I think are fascinating, that I think Florida's uniquely positioned to lead on, because we're the third largest state, because we have a robust transportation network, because we have leadership at the top that sees technology as a solution. I think that's why we're going to continue to see Florida in the driver's seat.
Thanks. All right. And if there's startups out there that are interested in coming to Florida, whether for testing or to set up shop, should we send them your way, Chris?
Absolutely. We're hoping to be the front door for autonomy in Florida.
And how can they reach you?
Our website is www.autonomous-florida.com.
Perfect. And can they find you on Twitter, online? Where
you can join my tens of followers on Twitter. It's Chris Emanuel FL. But I think for a little bit funnier commentary, you should really be following Jeff.
And Jeff, Brandes. Where can we find you on Twitter?
I'm at Jeffrey Brandes, JeffreyBrandes on Twitter. And you can always reach me on by email at brandes.jeff.web@flsenate.gov.
Very nice. And Greg, where can we find you?
At AV Greg R.
And I'm at Shared Mobility S.
And you can find the Mobility Podcast at Mobility Podcast and MobilityPodcast.com.
Perfect. And thank you guys. It's been a real pleasure. And thank you for having us here. It's a really great experience and a lot of exciting things going on here in Florida.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks. Thank you.